Right. Well, who's felt like they've heard from God already today, or met with God, or at least some sort of, yeah, you're feeling the presence of God. That's awesome. I hope you that continues. We're going through the book of Daniel, and we're in the story of Daniel in the lion's den. It's a story that probably most of us have heard before. If you went to Sunday school, you definitely would have heard it before. I've heard it 100 times, and it's been really quite cool for me to just go through it again and get some fresh sort of new revelation about it as an adult, kind of. So we're going to read from Daniel chapter 6. Should be up there. If you've got a Bible, you can read along from verse 1. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps. A satrap is like a sort of a person who oversees a district or something. Strange word, I know. To rule throughout the kingdom with 3 administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs. They were getting jealous, right? But they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So these administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever." The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. They're greasing him, right? "Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed." It's like they must have just brought him it ready to sign. Just, "Here you go. Go on, sign it." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. 3 times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human being except to you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den?" Stupid question, they know the answer. The king answered, "Yes, the decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." Then they said to the king, "Well, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah," as though the king didn't know who Daniel was, "pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays 3 times a day." When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, "Remember, your majesty, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." So he wasn't happy that he had to throw Daniel in there, but he did it anyway. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating, without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. Now at the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, May the king live forever. My God has sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. A little bit of extra detail there that maybe didn't need, but who am I? I think. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in the earth, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So that's that. That's Daniel and the lion's den. Pretty awesome story, eh? As I've been reading, I've realized that actually at this point, Daniel was quite an old man. I'd always seen this as it's a kid's story. So it's this young guy that gets thrown into the lions. But no, at this stage, at least 66 years has passed since he was taken as a captive from Jerusalem. So the guy's probably something like 80 years old when he gets thrown into the lion's den. He would have seen many kings come and go, served good kings and evil kings. He's been around a while in Babylon. I feel like this book is a testament to a life well lived. Daniel was a man who lived his life well, and he's an example to all of us. It's kind of like in this chapter, God is just sort of stepping back for a second and just saying, "Hey, let me show you my guy. He's lived his life well, and I've put him to the test, and look how well he's come through." As I've read and studied Daniel, I've realized that he's a man of amazing character. Okay, I want to highlight some of the character traits that Daniel has shown in this story and see what we can learn from this awesome man of God. So Daniel's found himself as one of the top three administrators in the kingdom, right? Maybe that's a role that he retained from King Belshazzar. We learned last week about the writing on the wall. And then when Daniel was able to interpret it, King Belshazzar said dressed him in purple and gave him the third highest position in the kingdom. And this has happened quite soon after that. So maybe he's just retained that role since then. However, he's in a very top position. He had favor with the king and who wanted to promote him even higher to now the highest ruler in the entire kingdom. So he was really good at what he did, right? It's sort of like, I kind of picture it like Persia's next top administrator, some sort of a reality TV show. There's three and then the two get voted off and now there's the one and he's the one that's going to, one administrator to rule them all. I think the term administrator, that it's sort of kind of, to me anyway, it sort of gives the idea of a paper pusher, someone like a secretary or something, but other translations call it a president or a ruler. So he's a very high up person, and he would probably be in charge of many, many areas of the kingdom. Maybe the military, the finances, trade, security, maybe even religion. All of that stuff would go through somebody like Daniel. Up until now, Daniel's kind of, we've seen him distinguishing himself by being able to interpret dreams and visions, and what else there was last week, understanding what the writing on the wall meant. Okay, so there's kind of, it was sort of, now anyway, he is distinguishing himself by being really good at running a country. Daniel wasn't just somebody who could hear from God. It was a spiritual kind of guy. He was actually a practical guy who knew how to do things well, how to run a country well. Okay, now he's 80 years old, so he's probably seen a few good countries, good and bad, so he knows what he's talking about. So the satraps and the administrators, they have a meeting, right? You'd think Daniel would know about it because he's one of the highest in the kingdom, but it's a secret meeting. So they all gathered together, 122 of them, and thought, what can we do to bring this guy down? They were fueled by jealousy, weren't they? They could tell that he was being promoted. He was going to be even higher than them, and they didn't like it. I think that's probably there's some darker forces at play here, and it wasn't just some jealous guys, but you know, we have a pagan kingdom ruled by basically, you know, idol worship and basically demons controlling a whole nation, right? And now there's this godly man rising up through the ranks, and he's going to take a lot of power. And I think it's more than just man's jealousy. I think this is a real spiritual battle, okay, to take down a godly man. When you excel at something, or you've got God's favor in something that you do, the result is not always positive from those around you. Have you noticed? Sometimes the good in you brings out the evil in people around you. Have you ever told somebody some good news? Something awesome happens to you and you tell someone, and their response is kind of not what you would expect from someone hearing good news. Maybe that's like you say, oh, I got a pay rise, or I got a new job, or something like this. And their response is more like, oh well, whoop-de-doo. Don't have to brag about it. You know, like, whoa, just telling you something cool happened, right? Often, sometimes when other people are promoted, our response is like, well, why do they get the blessing? Why not me? When's it my turn, Lord? Do you know what I'm talking about? Good. So the other two administrators and these 120 satraps, they're trying to find grounds for charges against him. How can we make him look as bad as we can before the king? It's kind of like an election campaign, right? We've got these two parties, or in this case, one candidate who's going for the top job. And everyone around him from the opposing parties are digging, trying to find, what can we find about this guy to bring out into, and so that people won't like him or people will think that he's bad. It might be dodgy financial dealings. It might be relationships or corruption. They had 120 of the most powerful people in the kingdom with all the underground connections. Surely they could dig up something juicy about Daniel. What were the skeletons in his closet? Do you have things in your past, maybe your present, that you're ashamed of? Hope that no one ever finds out about. Things you've done, things you've said, things you've thought. Well, we've all got things we'd rather forget about and hope no one knows about. Well, you don't need to worry, okay? Jesus has paid the price for those things, for our sins, their past, present, and future. People, however, will use anything they can when trying to bring you down in others' eyes. No need to worry. Unless you're going into politics, then get a good lawyer. But they could find no corruption in him, because he was trustworthy, and he was neither corrupt nor negligent. What an awesome statement of his integrity in everything he did. Daniel was a man of integrity. That's the first character trait. His work ethic and all his dealings were faultless. The satraps, the administrators, could not find anything to catch him out on. He was trustworthy. Trustworthy. It's a practical thing. He was who he said he was. He was reliable. The sort of guy that he would turn up when he said he was going to turn up. If he said, I will get that done, he'll get it done. He was dependable. He followed through on commitments. And he wasn't corrupt. Corrupt meaning wicked, self-seeking, the sort of guy that would scheme, make up little plots and things to make to try and elevate himself, like other people we hear about in this story. There would have been a lot of people around Daniel at the time who maybe on the cover, on the face, looked like honest, good business people, good at running a country. But dig a little deeper and they're all sort of scavenging, trying to climb this ladder of power in the government. Maybe that's why they thought, let's dig up some dirt on him. Because everyone's got dirt. It said he wasn't negligent. Negligence is a strange word. It means lazy or careless or casual or slack, right? Daniel was a man of purpose. He wasn't a lazy guy. And we know this even just from the very few things that it talks about him doing in this story. He spent a lot of time with God. He didn't just start seeking God when the trials came, when the hard times hit. Or when he didn't just every now and then pray to God. It said, as was his custom since the early days when he was going to pray three times a day. It's his custom. It's his ritual, okay? His habit or his tradition. You could say it was his religion. We Christians, we tend to steer away from this word or anything that may be interpreted as religious activity these days. It's been a big push away from religion. Have you noticed? I mean, I get it, right? Religion is different from relationship. And the push has been towards build a relationship with Christ. Don't just do a whole lot of stuff to get in God's good books. That's religion, and it's empty, and it leads to death. So I understand that. I get it. It's a whole big list of do's and don'ts. But sometimes this pushing away from religious activity, it results in kind of wishy-washy lives. They have no solid grounding. We don't want to look like we're a religious person. I wonder if we could take a page from Daniel's book when it comes to religion. He had prayed to God every day, three times a day, for 60 years or more. That's amazing, eh? I bet people looking on would think, oh, he's a very religious guy. And it might become old or boring or tedious over such a long time, but not to Daniel. I think we have to remember where Daniel was as well. Daniel was in Babylon, a long way away from his home, Jerusalem, which had been sacked. The temple had been destroyed. For 60 years, Daniel had opened his window and faced in that area towards Jerusalem and think, one day we'll be home, Lord. Come on, God, bring it about. Like, and he was desperate. You know, he would cry out to God. It says he was thankful. What an awesome guy. God saw this commitment. And did you notice God has used it as a sign of faithfulness in his word to us? Did you know that Daniel is one of the few leaders, there's only a very few in the Bible that God says nothing negative about? The Bible has a way of putting people up, and warts and all, and we see all their mistakes, we see their good side and their bad side. But with Daniel, God has just said, here he is, I've got nothing bad to say about him. He's just a life well lived. Isn't that awesome? Man, I hope God, I know God won't say that about me. He had worked in this Babylonian, or now the Medo-Persian Empire, for most of his life. 60 years or more. He'd served wicked kings who worshipped idols, many different gods, right? But he managed to stay faithful to the one true God, as well as being an excellent administrator, leader, and worker. What an amazing guy. His dream interpretations, the writing on the wall, all of this came, his faith, all of this came from consistently seeking God in prayer. Every day, building that relationship, crying out to God. It wasn't something where one day there was some writing on the wall and Daniel just sort of went, oh, yeah. That means you've been weighed, you've found wanting, and God's going to take your kingdom from you. God had this, he was constantly speaking to Daniel. Daniel was spending time with him. So, nothing works, right? These guys are trying to pin something on him. There's nothing. We've got nothing. Solution. The only way they could find to get him, to catch him out, was to make up a law that made it illegal to pray to God. So they devised a law that appealed to the king's ego. Not just any old law, but something that would stroke the ego of the king. Right, Darius, well, he was a self-seeking man. He ruled the kingdom, and he did it well by positioning people over other people, leaders over leaders, to make sure he wouldn't lose anything. They would all be accountable to leaders, and over, you know, his kingdom should grow. It shouldn't be costing him money. He was driven by his ego. Interesting, when the Bible only says a few things about people, to think, what has God chosen to reveal to us about this man? He liked the idea of the entire kingdom bowing and praying to him and exalting him above all others. I don't really know what he was thinking, to be honest. If you're married, you know that even one person bringing their requests to you can be too much. Oh, I just can't handle it. A whole kingdom, the whole world praying to him. He's insane. The administrators and satraps, they knew that he was a man driven by his ego. And so that's why they devised the plan the way they did. That's what they used. So this law goes through. For 30 days, everyone must pray only to Darius. Did you notice Daniel and his reaction? He reacted instantly. It's not like Daniel took a second to think about, oh, what do I do? I've been praying for 60 years to God, 3 times a day. Oh no, what am I going to do now? Instantly, he appears to not even have considered stopping praying to God. He just left the moment he heard about this law and went to his house and started praying to God. This is the first thing he did. Maybe he didn't quite get it. I would have sort of thought, Daniel, maybe you've misheard that you're not allowed to pray to God. And no, he's run off and he's praying now. Good one, Daniel. What would I do? What would you do? Hide. Okay, good. Maybe I was thinking what I would do. I'd probably try and find something to do for 30 days that would take up so much time, so much of my brain that I just forgot about praying for 30 days or something. Just too busy. Maybe I'd start to justify it. Well, it's only 30 days. I can easily go 4 or 5 days without praying. Oh, maybe a week. Well, it's only 4 weeks. Yeah, it'll be right. I just won't pray for 4 weeks. Well, Daniel's not like me, thank goodness. His character was so well known to these guys, these satraps and the administrators. They knew he would just keep praying. They knew they would catch him out because he was a man of principle. He was a man who just did the same thing, and that's how he lived. I wonder, do the people around me know me as a man of principles, man of character? What about you? Are your practices of following God more private? I wonder if I invited my workmates over and sat them down to dinner and said, I'm just going to give thanks for the food. I wonder if they would go, oh, of course he is, he's Christian. Or if they would go, oh, okay. Pray. Brendan? Really? See, Daniel was a man of principles. He prayed to God consistently, no matter what. The law of the land came second to him serving and praying to his God. There may come a time when the law is not on your side as a Christian. What do? Do we protest? Do we just give up? You know, right now, all over the world, there are people being thrown in prison because the law says you can't be a Christian here. You can't go to church and meet like we are. People being executed. What are my principles? What are the non-negotiable things in my life, in your life? Are there things that you will always do no matter what anyone says or the law dictates? Prayer? Would that be one of them? What about church? When I was growing up, there was a guy, a sportsman. I wonder if you know who I'm talking about. He wouldn't play sports on a Sunday. Do you know who I'm talking about? Michael Jones, right? We all know it. It was his stand that he took, and he was kind of out on a limb by himself, but everyone knew Michael Jones, this amazing all-black rugby player, he won't play on a Sunday, right? And it wasn't like he was someone that we can do without, just we'll select someone else. He was a great rugby player. If you got tackled by him, you knew about it. You know, what an amazing testimony to our nation, to the people around him. Even now, when I'm thinking about something, a work commitment or something on a Sunday, I always think, oh, Michael Jones, what would Michael Jones do? if it's something that's going to take me away from church commitments, you know, what an awesome testimony. He was a man of principles, and his principle was, I don't play rugby on Sunday, that's my church day. Cool, eh? What else? What about work? Taking a sick day? Pulling a sickie? What about tithing? Alcohol? Family? Marriage? Are there things in your life you simply will not budge on? Here's what Joshua said to the Israelites a long time earlier than this. In Joshua 24, it says, and if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the region beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. What a statement of that of conviction. He basically says, this is my conviction. This is my principle. We will serve the Lord. Will you stand with me and serve the Lord, Jehovah? We need to be people of conviction, people who have strong beliefs about what we will and will not do. You know, Joshua, he encouraged the people of Israel to serve and worship only Jehovah. So that means turning towards God means turning away from other things. What is God calling me or you to turn away from? This is the type of principle that Daniel lived by. He was committed to praying and serving God no matter what the cost. Awesome. So the result, he was thrown into the den of lions. Maybe just take a second to think that through. An 80-year-old man is thrown into a den of lions. They're hungry lions. It would have been dark. They put a thing over the top. He's sitting there alone, surrounded by hungry lions. What would you be thinking? Uh-oh. Oh, well, this is how I go, I guess. What can I do? Daniel was a man who trusted God. Wasn't he? He trusted God through anything. Even though the law had been changed and it would cost him his life, when he found himself at the bottom of a pit in the dark with hungry lions all around, he continued to pray and trust God. Then what happened? What happened? Anyone? An angel turns up. An angel turns up. Good. Needed something to happen. An angel is a useful thing in a pit of lions. I can kind of imagine it. You know, it's dark and Daniel would be sitting there and he can smell these lions. Well, they can smell him, and they're standing up, walking around, coming over to him, ready to pounce and take him out. This angel, big old angel, stand up, grab them, shut that mouth, and you get back, push them away. Awesome. Awesome to have an angel with you in a den of lions. And his response in the morning, I can imagine he wouldn't have slept much that night. The lions probably didn't either, wandering around. It just probably would have gone on all night long. So he hasn't slept all night. He's tired. He turns up in the morning. Darius turns up and says, you know, like, are you okay? And his response, isn't it amazing? Oh, king, live forever. Not really the response I probably would have given to the guy who just threw me into a den of lions in the morning. Oh, king, live forever. It sounds like that was sort of their way of addressing the king. The satraps and all that talked to him like that as well. But Daniel was a man of honor. His reaction to hearing that the king's voice in the morning. You know, most people would be really angry. Especially if you're the second highest ruler in the land and you're 80 years old, you haven't slept all night. He says, I was found innocent in his sight. God found me innocent, so he sent his angel to protect me. Wasn't that so cool? Did you know, if you're a Christian, you've been found innocent in God's sight? Maybe you're in a pit right now. Maybe there are lions lurking around you. God is in the pit with you. Every time that lion raises its head to come against you, God rises up and says, you get back, devil. Pushes it away. This one's mine. He's been found innocent in my sight. Maybe that's a word for someone here today. You're in a pit. Now, whatever that pit could be addiction, could be fear, unforgiveness, maybe just sin. Maybe you dug yourself a pit and you can't climb out now, and you're surrounded by lions. I want you to know today, God is with you in the pit. If you'll invite him, if you're a Christian, you've claimed the blood of Jesus over your life. It means you've been found innocent in his sight. It means he's got your back. Maybe it's time for you to come forward and say, God, would you join me in this pit? Can you help me out of this pit? This is sort of the end of the story of Daniel in the Bible. From here on in the book, it goes into his prophecies and his visions. So we kind of now can look back on his life. We know what we need to know about him. His life consisted of some standout moments where he stood by his convictions and spoke up, even when his life was at risk. He was an old man in a pagan land. He remained faithful and consistent to his faith. And it all comes to a head with him being thrown in to a den of lions. You know, as an old man, the testing hadn't finished for Daniel. As an 80-something-year-old guy, God still had more testing for him, but I think God knew anyway what the outcome would be because he knew Daniel's character. Don't think that because you've been through a trial or two that you are done and you can just sort of relax. Retire in your faith. Stay hungry. Stay faithful. The other thing, Daniel, what an example to the younger men in his life. You know, if you're an older person, can I encourage you as a sort of younger person, keep going, keep running that race, because you're such an example to us younger people. I think of my granddad, and he's not with us anymore, but what an amazing, faithful man of God. He served God his entire life, you know, and he served the people around him, And what a cool legacy to leave for your grandchildren to live up to. Maybe that's a word for someone here as well. Are you a person of principles who lives by your principles? Maybe it's today is a time of saying, what are my principles? What am I going to stand for? What won't I budge on? Maybe it's time to put a stake in the ground and say, choose this day who you will serve. As for me and my house, we're serving God. You know, we sung that song earlier. It says, I've decided to follow Jesus. No turning back from here. You know, maybe it's time for someone here to take that step and stand up for what you believe in. Or maybe you're finding yourself in a pit. God's with you. And if you'll invite him, he can take you out of that pit. It might take some time, a few sleepless nights. But look, a word like this and a story like this requires response, you know. So I want to just challenge you. That's really all I have to share. But if God is tugging at your heart today and just challenged you on something, respond. Get someone to pray for you. Tell someone, maybe someone else can stand with you in that pit. Yeah. Thank you.